a Spanish fort into Mobile, my hometown. Mr. T.
Welcome back to the General Show. Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us. So what's left of this Friday morning before Memorial Day? A quick programming note, no show on Monday. Fisher House will be broadcasted in the place of this program. But we'll be back on Tuesday, and we'll get back into the swing of things. So just an update for you there. Joining us now on the line, we do this every Friday about this time. We like to call who I call our returning champion, represents me in the Alabama Senate, State Senator Chris Elliott. Senator, good morning. How are you?
It is a morning, and I'm doing well. It certainly was a late night and an early morning in Montgomery, but glad to be back in Baldwin County here, just barely.
So I guess you're on the road. Let's start out here. General fund into the wee hours of the morning. You voting no on that in a supplemental? Just talk about what was going on there and why you voted against it.
Well, you know, the process is what the process is, and, you know, the details are getting worked out in a conference committee report when the Senate non-concurs with the House bill. And so you end up with a group of six really looking through, you know, three from the House, three from the Senate, looking at the bill and making some changes that find some common ground and some compromise, you know, and the budget. The budget process is an interesting one. You know, you start out with funding, you know, state agencies and doing what the general fund is there for. But then, you know, it's the general fund chairman's job and have been the education budget chairman's job to find the votes to pass their bill. And sometimes that involves pork for, you know, and we certainly had plenty of money to go around this time around. So there was a lot of pork in those budgets. And then, you know, you have to look at how much, what your level of spending is. So this is what really probably concerned me most. And that was, it is a level of spending that I think is unsustainable. We know that the economy is slowing down. We know that this economy and therefore the revenues from our budgets are a result of this inflationary period, post-COVID inflationary period driven in large part by federal government spending. This is all artificial. And to fund state agencies at the levels we have means only that we will have to cut them and cut them significantly in the coming years. And so I didn't think it was the right thing to do to plus up all of these budgets when we know this isn't solid, stable growth. This is an artificial high brought on by inflationary federal government spending. And I'm afraid that in the next year or 2 years, you know, certainly before the end of the quadrennium, we're going to see the need to significantly dial back what these agencies are getting and operating under once they've gotten used to it. And I just thought it would have been a much better way to proceed, to realize this was an artificial high and to not spend it all. But we spent it all over a few objections.
That's a fascinating take because, I mean, all throughout this process and when they talk about surpluses and talk about cutting taxes, and it's always, we got to be real careful here. We're expecting an economic downturn, and we need to make sure that we're ready for that. It seemed to me like during all these discussions, Senator, that we were putting the fiscal health of the state ahead of everything. And I'm not saying that, I mean, there's an argument to be made for and against it, but even ahead of giving money back to the taxpayers and putting it back into the private sector would be my preference. But you know, when you say that, well, clearly there's some double talk there, right? That on one hand, we're talking about how important it is and how virtuous it is to put money back. On the other hand, we're putting money and we're, like you said, we're plussing up a lot of state agencies here.
Well, and again, it's just simply, I don't think anybody thinks that it's sustainable. But when you have, you know, to have the agencies beating down your door and saying, I need this and I need that. And there are real needs out there. There's no question about it. you know, mental health needs, you know, law enforcement needs. Go down the list. There are needs, but all, the realization is going to come and going to come quickly that our budgets, our revenues are not going to stay where they are now because they are artificially inflated. And it's going to be painful when we've spent a year or so funding these agencies at a certain level, and then we have to go back in and say, I'm sorry, the sugar high, the federal government spending high has worn off, and it's gone. And we don't have the revenue that we had last year. And so we have to now cut. And, you know, the one-time expenses are one thing. Yes, the money's there. You know, yes, we can do a rebate. And you can have the conversation about how much the rebate should be. But those one-time expenses, I'm a little bit more understanding of, it's the recurring one. It's the growth of government that scares me and should. And good conservatives talk about the growth of government, speaking against it. But what we did last night, excuse me, early this morning, was we grew government, and I voted no.
Well, I want to turn back to something earlier this week with the first late night you guys had with expanding the Accountability Act. You and some others, Senator Gutcher, we had him on earlier this week when I was up at the State House on Wednesday on a program, kind of talking about school choice. And, you know, my reporter for the Senate and I were kind of going through and looking at, y'all expanded the Accountability Act, but which districts did it really matter? I mean, like, who? And it turns out that all you guys that voted, not all you guys, but the guys that voted for it, I mean, they don't have any failing or challenged or whatever they call them, priority schools in their district. And then the people voting against it, they're the ones with the priority schools, and they were going to see the most benefit out of this expansion of the Accountability Act. And it went on late. I mean, what was going on there? And you were against it, or you voted for it, but you voted against the cloture resolution. Well, what was going on there? Kind of lay it out for us.
Well, look, the Accountability Act that Senator Marsh, you know, set up when he was there was a noble pursuit and a step in the right direction when it comes to school choice. It was a small step, and by passing Senator Chastain's Accountability Act changes, we've taken another small step in a direction that provides school choice to those that are in failing schools. Forgive me, I'm going to keep calling them failing schools. We can call them whatever we want to call them, but that's what we're talking about. And you are correct. They are in areas that are traditionally not represented by Republicans, right? You have inner city and Black Belt areas that have schools with real problems. And, you know, there's the argument that, oh, it's not going to be spent in my district, and it's not. My district will not benefit from that. But there is an opportunity sometimes to really help those that are in dire situations. And some of the children that go to school in the inner cities and in particular areas of the Black Belt have real educational challenges and schools that are not meeting those. So the Accountability Act is a good way to assist those families to get those kids into a place where they've got some choice, they've got some options, because they need it, because what's there is failing by definition, whatever we decide to call it. But I didn't think that the Accountability Act went far enough. I didn't think that helps advance the school choice conversation that the PRICE Act did, which would have given families $6,900, the amount of state funding, to go use how you want to, for you to be responsible for your child's education. And if it's going to a public school like my kids do, that's great. And I think that's a fantastic idea. But if they're in a situation that is unique, if they're in a situation where that school's not working for them, whatever you're zoned for, to go do what you think is best for your child. And I think we as Republicans need to embrace that concept, and we need to continue to work towards it And that's why I voted against ending debate on that topic. I wanted to continue to talk about how we could make school choice a reality for all Alabamians and all children, as opposed to just those that are trapped in failing schools.
And you and I don't know how we've avoided this topic, but you sound very, very pro school choice, at least as the Price Act had it. I mean, obviously it's a moot point now, and we have to wait till next year. But you sound like this is something you're going to get behind inevitably. I wonder, you know, next iteration, if it will be something different, or something with a little bit of different membership shepherding it through the legislative process, if that gives it a better shot. But you sound like you're probably for it.
Well, conceptually, philosophically, I think it's an easy sell. It just is, right? Parents are in charge of their children's education and making education decisions based on what's best for their children. That to me is not the complicated part of this. The complicated part is, what does it do to our current education system that's been around for a while? What kind of financial impact, and how is that going to affect things? And that's where I think Senator Stutz, who was carrying the legislation, who sponsored the legislation, was wise to take an amendment that limited the impact to $50 million over 3 years. Now, we're out of a huge, you know, multi-billion dollar education trust fund budget, but to say it's capped at $50 million, I thought was a great step in the right direction. You know, at $50 million over 3 years, you're not going to do any harm to the giant, you know, school bureaucracies that we have. And I think the data that we could have gotten out of running that program for a couple of years with that $50 million cap on it would have been invaluable to see how it really worked and who took advantage of it and where they took advantage of it. So while I can agree with it philosophically, I thought that the restraints on it were great to start off with, so that we didn't mess up, you know, our public education system, which is in a lot of places, including Baldwin County, great. But at the same time, looked broadly at it conceptually and took a step to see how is this actually going to work when the rubber meets the road. Unfortunately, that didn't happen, won't happen this session, but I expect it to come back year after year.
Senator, what do you think these next two legislative days look like? I mean, there's a lot of things that are outstanding, but historically, there's not really any kind of standard here. It's always inconsistent, but what are you expecting?
Well, with the budget's gone, and of course with staying over after midnight and then coming back in and being in there till past 2 o'clock in the morning, which is crazy. I would much rather come back and handle that this morning, since we went ahead and burned a legislative day. But we burned another legislative day, so we only have those 3 days left now. So that will be two next week and then one other day. But I expect the two next week to really be clean up any other bills that are important to someone. And I have two in the House that are pro-law enforcement bills that I hope pass. But to deal with those types of bills that certainly are not as paramount of important as the budget, and work through that process. I expect them to be relatively long days on the floor. Most things will be through committee. I'll have a committee meeting on Wednesday when we get back that'll have almost a dozen bills in it that need that that second reading in the upper chamber, mostly House bills again. So we'll try to move those and get those out. So it'll be clean up. And then the question is that third day, right? Do we hold that back for any other, you know, executive amendments or vetoes by the governor and wait for that? Of course, that's 10 days after our last day of session, if we're out of session, or just 5 days for the budgets, which I think is important. So we could see any executive amendments on the budget next week, and I think we'll be dealing with that too.
Well, and then that last day, just it's there to override any pocket vetoes or anything. But you haven't had to use that day in recent the last few years, have you?
We haven't, and I think you're correct in saying, you know, that the governor and leadership have worked really well together on issues that are important to her. And where she has wanted to provide input, I think the governor's office has done that in consultation with the legislature on the front end. It's my hope that we don't see a lot of amendments, although with the budgets, I can almost expect that there's going to want to be an opportunity potentially to amend some of those through an executive amendment process. I think we will deal with some of those next week.
Well, last question, we'll get you out of here on this. Kind of late in the late going there. The Montgomery delegation really put off by not getting more money for that water park, gateway, whatever they want to frame it as. And then the other thing that was kind of surprising to me, Senator Singleton saying nothing really coming out of the general fund. And Todd Stacey earlier on the program said, well, he's just kind of upset that that debacle of school didn't come together. But that was supposed to come out of the ETF. Is it unusual that he wouldn't have somewhat $1 million-plus project out of the general fund like that for his district? That was a little surprising to me, but I tend to be a novice at this stuff.
You know, when I was at the mic earlier this week, I was talking about a study that I had commissioned by the Public Research Council of Alabama, looking at where tax revenue is generated in this state and also where it is spent. And as you might imagine, Baldwin County generates more tax revenue per capita than any other county in this state. I bring that to light to tell you that the state of Alabama spends more money in Senator Singleton's district per capita than any other place in the state. So while there may not have been a particular marquee project, I will tell you that they certainly are beneficiaries of the largesse of Senator Singleton's representation, again, more so than per capita than anyone else in the state.
And the water park project, do you think the governor's going to try to take another stab at that with the executive amendment?
It's entirely possible. I mean, I think that the $5 million that was placed back in there was probably more of a placeholder. It would not surprise me if she tried to plus that up. You know, the problem, of course, is where do you get it from? At this point, it's a zero-sum game. You're going to have to take it from somewhere to add it back in at this point.
Senator, thanks for making time for us this morning. We always appreciate it, and hopefully get back home and get some rest.
I am looking forward to this weekend. There's no question about it.
State Senator Chris Elliott there. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Getting crazy. I'm getting hammered. Setting